This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI. Woo!
Welcome into episode 444 of The Skate Podcast. I am Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin following a long holiday Memorial Day weekend. I hope the two of you had a good time. I hope our listeners had a nice time. And Bridget and Scott, we ended last week with a GM mode where the three of us tried to put our collective hats on and utilize the AFP projections that were given to us online and follow the salary cap to the best of our abilities. There's definitely some opinions from listeners on our conclusion there. And there's also some opening shifts we wanted to get to today as well. There are some Bruins related news items to get to. So I'll throw it over to you guys now for opening shifts.
Yeah, I'll go first because I think the biggest story is Jeremy Swayman's play at the World Championships, helping to lead the United States to their first gold medal at the World Championships since 1933. Swayman, early in the tournament, split starts with Joey Decord. We talked, you know, this is probably 2 weeks ago at this point, about the rough game he had against Norway, where he gave up 5 goals in the third period. U.S. still ended up winning that game in overtime. Since then, Swayman ran with the starting job, took it away from Decord, and was really good the rest of the tournament. Made 5 more starts, won them all, did not give up more than 2 goals in any of them, and caps it off with a 25-save shutout against Switzerland in the gold medal game. And, you know, look, is Switzerland a international hockey power? No, but they had a good team in this tournament. They really beat up on some of the lesser teams and ended up in the gold medal game. You know, had current and former NHLers on that team. And Swayman, you know, didn't have to make a ton of great saves, was tested a few times in that gold medal game, but it had to be perfect. It took until overtime for anyone to score, and Tage Thompson finally scored the golden goal to win it a little over 2 minutes into overtime. There's several Bruins worth discussing in terms of their world championship performance. I know Brian's going to touch on another, but really I think Swayman is the story because we've talked about it. Like, he's, in terms of getting right, in terms of bouncing back, he is the most important player on the Bruins. And that is assuming he's back, because obviously people have thrown out trade possibilities. We've even gotten a few emails about potential trades. I think he's probably back. I don't see him getting traded this offseason, but the Bruins need him to be right. And, you know, we talked after that Norway game about, well, maybe he still needs a reset after this tournament. Well, he kind of found it in the middle of this tournament and finished it off really strong with something to really feel good about. And if you're the Bruins and you're Swayman, you just hope that carries into what now becomes, you know, hopefully a much more positive summer off season and something that allows him to regroup for training camp and preseason and just have a much better season, a much better start, a clean start for next year.
Yeah. And like, winning anything tends to boost your confidence just no matter what. And it, you know, sometimes it's kind of funny, you forget about this, but there's guys that have been in the league for a long time that, you know, if their team's not a good playoff team, or even if their team just hasn't won a Stanley Cup, like, there's a lot of guys who go so long without winning anything that it's kind of, you probably lose a little bit of confidence just from that. So getting an international win is something that's a big deal for a lot of people. And Mason Laura and Andrew Peak were on that team as well. Kind of funny that I don't know, those guys probably not playing on the Olympic team. but yeah, so there was three Bruins that were over there for Team USA, and they ended up winning it. And it was just nice to see them have that, get that win, which to especially international, like European teams, is, it's a big deal. And I'm sure it felt like a big deal for those guys too.
Yeah. And it does tell you that there are a lot of American players who were not too happy with not being selected to the Four Nations team for Team USA. They took that very seriously. There were plenty of qualified, candidates for that Four Nations team that didn't make it. And I do think if you look at that roster, I would say probably, if healthy, 70% of the Four Nations roster should make, maybe even more, should make the Olympic team if healthy. But I do think there was probably three or four forward spots that are going to be very subjective come when they select the team. So Tage Thompson, Clayton Keller, Logan Cooley, among others, notably Connor Garland had a good tournament. Depends what, again, and the thing about this tournament that we didn't have at Four Nations was it was played on international ice surface size wise. Now, I don't know if the Olympics is NHL's regulation size. Do we know that?
I think it's NHL size.
Okay, so then the Four Nations tournament is more applicable in that regard. But nonetheless, yeah, definitely a tryout for a lot of young American players that are looking to make a name for themselves for the Olympics. So,
well, including the goalie trio that they're going to take is definitely not solidified. So, I mean, yeah, it's important that Swayman keeps up what he was doing and carries it and has a good season.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Frank Nazar had a great tournament as well. And while I still don't think he's really an Olympic candidate, he probably went from not even in the conversation to, hey, you got to at least bring up his name because he was really good in this tournament.
Yeah. Matty Beniers had a good tournament. I think Zeev Bouyum he's going to be a full-time rookie next year in the NHL, and he's going to have a really hell of a start to his season to probably make that Olympic team. But, I mean, he has the skill set. I mean, he's young, but he on the back end, he has all the skill in the world. You just don't know. So,
how about Jackson Lacombe coming off a breakout season with the Ducks that flies under the radar because the Ducks weren't really very good, but then follows it up with a strong showing here. And all of a sudden you're like, U.S. is loaded on defense, but maybe there's a way he pushes in.
And then Cutter Gauthier, Will Smith, they might just lose out because of the numbers game and some youth, but they're going to be two prominent faces in American hockey for the next 10-15 years.
They probably, I would say it's not this Olympics, but they'll be there eventually. You know, those are guys that you will see maybe in the 4 years later after this current one, which is coming up in Milan next February. So it might be a little too soon for them now because they are really still young in their careers as well. So, but certainly feel like those are guys that you'll see at some point in the maybe following Olympics, or, I think they're good enough. Hopefully if their careers progress, like they seem like they're going to, they'll be on Team USA for the Olympics eventually.
And just a couple of other things to note, obviously Team Canada wasn't a perfect Team Canada roster for what they could ice, but it was very good for Team Canada considering it was World Championships. But Team Finland was obviously without four or five of their best players to represent their country. They're playing for the Dallas Stars. Team Russia is obviously not a thing at the moment. But that said, like Team Sweden, I think, had a pretty representative team for what they would have in the Olympics, and USA beat them handedly. And my point in saying all this, Czech Republic as well and others, a lot of the European countries showed as good as they probably could roster-wise. And that USA team obviously en route to gold beat some really solid teams at pretty close to what you'd see at their Olympic team, like Team Sweden. And that is, we'll call it Team USA's B team. And it's a bigger point here, which is for decades now, the census for Team Canada has been, they are so deep and so highly talented that Team Canada could ice two, maybe even three, but let's just say multiple Olympic rosters that could compete for gold. Well, I think the USA is in that conversation now as well, in addition to Canada. But they just proved No, Canada wasn't at full strength. No, there was no Team Russia, and no, Finland wasn't at full strength. But Sweden was, and a lot of the other teams were. And that USA team, skill-wise, that USA team could absolutely compete for an Olympic gold. They just proved it. Now, they would probably fall short to a full-strength Canada or something like that, obviously. But anyway, it just shows how far USA hockey has come. Any final thoughts on that before I go to my opening shift?
No, we can circle back to it, but you can go to your opening shift.
So Scott talked about it. There was another Bruin that had a really solid tournament, and that is Elias Lindholm. Now, Elias Lindholm, he finished World Championships leading the tournament in goal scoring with 8, and he finished the tournament tied for 2nd in points with 8 goals, 6 assists, 14 points in 10 games played. Now, obviously, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, that means Elias Lindholm is, you know, he's going to be a lock to be a point per game guy in the NHL next year, and I'm just going to absolve last season. No, I'm not absolving last season. He had a very, very poor season for fan standards and the Bruin standards. Now, you could look at his production the previous couple of years and say, maybe people shouldn't have been so surprised. But nonetheless, he had a down year last year, but he had a really strong last month and a half of the season. So I'm not absolving last year, but let's just talk about the here and now. He had a good tournament, he had a good end to the last season. I think with a full summer of training, mental reset, and a little bit of confidence about his game from the end of last season through World Championships, I think Elias Lindholm should be in a very good place heading into this offseason and into next year, whereas 3 months ago, it looked like there was no light at the end of the tunnel. At least now, he has all the things going for him to have the offseason that he needs to have the start to the season next year that he needs, where hopefully, guys, he could be a 60 to 70 point producer for the Boston Bruins, especially if he's playing with David Pastrnak for the majority of next year, which obviously at this moment is TBD.
Yeah. We'll get more into that as well, unless you guys want a quick reaction to the Lindholm tournament.
No, we can circle back.
Okay, so we'll get back to World Championships as a whole. But there's another thing happening in the near future for the Bruins, which is the most recent reporting about to decide on their head coach in the next week. So the process is kind of coming to the end. Final interviews are going to be this week. And then a decision, obviously, I assume will come shortly after that. So we might find out who the new head coach is for the Bruins, you know, next few days or maybe early next week, or, you know, it's coming soon. We've been talking about it a lot since the offseason came early for the Bruins. But with this timeline,
sorry, Bridget, just to cut you off. It's going to be Thursday or Friday because I'm off those days. So,
oh, yeah,
that's always when it happens. So yep. just lock that in.
Or it'll be right after we record like that day. But hey, we've actually avoided that quite a few times recently, but
now you just by speaking about it, you just jinxed it.
I know. Maybe we broke the curse and maybe I just put it right back on, but that should be something that we're getting soon. And though we've talked a lot about some of the other things that are happening in the off season, like free agency and the draft, like we have a set date for that, so we know when that's coming. The coaching situation and a few contract extensions, like those are things that we won't know the day until it happens. But with the timeline being what it is, if final interviews are this week, then that means candidates are ruled out that we thought would maybe have a chance. And so any coaches, assistant coaches that are remaining in the playoffs, it sounds like they're just the timeline. They're not going to be able to interview for the job. So that means it's probably one of the guys that we mentioned a few weeks ago. We've talked about some reporting that they had interviewed 15 or more guys. They pretty much were interviewing everyone. But our coach that we decided on in our GM series was Marco Sturm. And it sounds like he could be a good candidate still. For the team. And I don't know, Scott, if you have the list up of what that I think it was a Frank Saravalli report, or it was about a week ago that gave like a list of like seven guys that he knew had interviewed. But yeah, unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot of reporting on maybe some people that he's narrowed it down to. But final interviews, Scott, do you think that means like, all right, everybody gets a final interview, or like three, four people get a final interview?
No, yeah, I would assume it's a smaller group, but it's certainly not going to be 15 people. I would imagine maybe five at most. But yeah, Pierre LeBrun had a report last week. Basically said he doesn't know who made the cut, but that they've talked to a lot of people, and most of them are names we already knew. Joe Sacco, Jay Leach, Marco Sturm, Jay Woodcroft, Mitch Love, who we had speculated about, but I don't know if that was known that he had interviewed. And then maybe the one new name was Luke Richardson, former Blackhawks coach, who I got to be honest, I didn't really see coming and don't. Again, I've said it before, I do like, you know, being the team that gives the guy the second chance. But in that vein, like, personally, I would have Woodcroft over Richardson. I think he's a little more accomplished. You know, yeah, it's interesting. Like, I don't think Sacco or Leach have been told they're out. I assume they won't be told that until the end. The Bruins probably at least going to do them the courtesy of keeping them around to the end. I imagine Sturm and Woodcroft are finalists. We've heard from other reports that, you know, that reference them as like leading candidates or serious candidates. You know, so the rest of the names, yeah, I don't know how serious of a candidate Mitch Love is or Luke Richardson. If those guys had a shot at the final cut, I don't know if the Bruins have had, like, you know, there's still a couple of big names out there, right, that we don't think they're in on, but Peter Laviolette and John Tortorella have not landed jobs in this cycle yet. Maybe Bruins are still considering them. We really haven't heard anything about that. We really haven't heard much about those guys in general, even with other jobs. So maybe they just sit this cycle out. You know, possibly you could see one or both of them on TV for a year.
I was going to say, can you imagine like Torts as, you know, the panelist out on like the TNT panel or something, like,
right,
the intermissions, and just like, oh, this is what I would have said right now in the locker room. I want to know, actually, like, I would be interested for that to, which I don't think he would actually talk about it, but wouldn't you like to hear the Torts version of what he would say in the locker room in each intermission?
Yeah. I mean, if Tortorella just like speaks his mind, like he usually does, he could be great on like TNT, especially in that setting.
I agree. I think Marchand should one day be a broadcaster.
Definitely.
Like, I think Brad Marchand is built for it if he wants to. Maybe he just wants to retire and go fishing and keep up his like hunting and fishing brand. But I think he should be my broadcast partner someday. So
there you go.
So guys, we don't know the exact list of guys that they have interviewed through this first round. But let me ask you a question, because I've seen a couple of people mention to me online that the Bruins should have interviewed or hired Gardner McDougal, who is the coach of the the Moncton Wildcats of the Q, who also is, which is where Caleb Denoyer plays. Now, I personally have always answered those individuals with, yeah, he seems like a charismatic old school hockey coach. Like, he's got the fun Canadian accent. He's a soundbite machine, but it just doesn't appear that he doesn't have the pedigree or the qualifications that Don Sweeney spoke of. And so if we're talking about potential candidates based off what Don Sweeney has said, somebody like Gardner McDougal doesn't fit that mold. Do you think that Don Sweeney, if that is true, is doing himself a disservice by not having as wide of a net as possible? Or do you think that maybe behind closed doors, he has maybe had talks with some non-NHL experienced people that we just may not know about?
I mean, Don Sweeney has been up in Moncton, so he's gotten a firsthand look at how that team plays and how Gardner McDougal coaches. Obviously, the main reason he's been up there is, well, two reasons: to scout Caleb Denoyer, a potential pick at 7 overall, but also to get their own prospect, Loke Johansson, who they drafted last year. who plays for Moncton. So I think the Bruins are very familiar with that organization. And yeah, it ultimately comes back to exactly what Don Sweeney told us, which is their next coach would almost certainly have some form of NHL exposure. And Gardner McDougal does not. So yeah, he's been successful in the Q, which I would say is the weakest of the three CHL leagues that is being proven out. In the Memorial Cup, where both Moncton and Rimouski are now 0-2, while Medicine Hat and London are both 2-0. And he was successful in Canadian University, which is even several steps below that. So yeah, he does seem like a good coach. You're right, charismatic, but
he also doesn't have the resume. He also has the Lanny McDonald mustache. So like, how could you not consider
certainly,
that your head coach?
Certainly bumps him up a few spots. No question.
Absolutely.
Well, what I was going to say to what you said, Brian, about do you think that maybe behind closed doors there's been interviews that are, you know, not fitting what he said at the press conference after the season about how he wants somebody with NHL experience? Like, we talked about college coaches. I haven't heard of any college coaches that have been interviewed for this position. And, you know, we're a little bit tapped into college hockey just because of the other nature of, you know, Scott occasionally covers Hockey East stuff and, you know, the NCAA tournament. I obviously cover it a lot. Like, I have not heard a whisper about them interviewing anyone from college. And
I don't know if there were any official interviews. I wouldn't be surprised if early on there were phone calls with both Jay Pandolfo and David Carl. But, you know, we know Carl took himself out of the running for some jobs pretty early and then signed a big extension with Denver. And Pandolfo, basically what I thought from the start is I think he wants to stick at BU for at least a few more years, mostly to see his son, but I know he also wants to win a national title there. They've been close, but haven't gotten over the hump yet. So I never
thought chagrin.
Yeah. Michigan. I never thought either one of them was going to be a real serious candidate for this job. And I don't think they were. If there were phone calls, I don't think it progressed past that for either of them or for any other college coach.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So is there, I don't think our opinions changed though, but I'll just ask one more time. Who do you hope it is? Cause I mean, we did our first GM episode. If people want to go back and listen to that, it's in our Skate Pod playlist, put it out early last week, I think. We talked about who our favorite candidates were, and I assume for you guys, it hasn't changed. And the person that we picked was Marco Sturm. So maybe he actually has a legit chance at being the Bruins' next head coach.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at this question, I just try to figure out which one of these candidates can not just be a guy or a good coach, but push the needle and really be part of the solution here in Boston. And to be honest with you guys, I don't feel incredibly confident in any of these guys that it's them. There's only so much to go off of, especially at a NHL head coaching level. But yeah, I mean, obviously Misha Donskoff doesn't appear to be in the running anymore. So, and he also had questions. He has never even been a head coach at the AHL level. So I don't know. I mean, for me, it's, so you have Jay Woodcroft, you have Marco Sturm, Mitch Slough. I mean, I'm not entirely familiar with a lot of these guys because they haven't been in our market and they haven't been prominent head coaches. But I guess, I don't know. I feel like, here's the thing. A lot of Bruins fans will probably scoff at a Marco Sturm hiring. Many would probably love it. They would think back to Game 6, 2008, and the fact that he was a very good Bruin and would look at his coaching pedigree and say, he's a qualified candidate. But then you'd have other Bruins fans that would look at it and say, oh, the Bruins probably just hired the cheapest coach possible and somebody who they already have a relationship with, and it was just an easy hire for them. But I think that's a bit of an unfair approach as well. I do like our Marco Sturm pick. Jay Woodcroft has a good resume, especially further down an organizational depth chart in the coaching element with a lot of successful teams in the past. But I don't know, is his personality a very prominent one? Do the Bruins want a prominent personality? Would they rather a more in the weeds coach? I don't know. It's just, what do you guys think?
Well, I wanted to read because I feel like people probably lost track of Marco Sturm for a chunk of years, maybe. And I just want to read what he's been doing recently. You know, his resume in terms of coaching, and he's on the younger side. He's 46 years old, which is younger than some of the other candidates. But so since he retired, he was coaching on the international level since 2015 with Germany. And then he started as an NHL assistant in 2018 with Los Angeles and stuck with them for 4 years. And then he's been the head coach for 3 years with the AHL team for LA, which is the Ontario Reign. And it is Ontario, California, not Canada, which people mix up a lot. And I will admit I've mixed up before. So yeah, he has that NHL assistant coach background. And this isn't just like hey, we're going to throw this guy a bone because he's new and we want to, you know, do something different and out of the box. Like, there is certainly experience that backs up him as a.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Good candidate.
Yeah, for sure. He's done it at multiple different levels. He's been on, when I say winning teams, I mean teams with winning records, teams that are in the playoffs. Has not won any major trophies in the sense that, like, the Kings didn't win a Stanley Cup during those years. He hasn't won a Calder Cup in the AHL. But, you know, with Germany, did win a silver medal at the Olympics, which for that team, given the history of Germany hockey, which is just not a power, like, that might as well have been gold that it was celebrated that way, even though that was a tournament without NHL players. Still an impressive accomplishment. So, yeah, and, you know, I don't know if Marco Sturm's really the most charismatic guy either. Certainly not with the media. Like, you know, he might not be the best hire for, like, us selfishly. Like, I don't know if we're going to get the best interviews and the best quotes from him. But from all accounts, like, very respected by players and a good communicator with players. And ultimately, that's more important. You know, I think, sure, like, you know, teams would love to have, like, you know, the presence, like a Bruce Cassidy who's, like, good in front of cameras, or even Paul Maurice, who, you know, gives out these quotes viral all the time.
No.
But it's not, ultimately, that's pretty far down the list of what, like, Don Sweeney and Cam Neely are going to be prioritizing. The communication with players is more important than the communication with media and fans.
I mean, Paul Maurice, good coach, not someone I would want to deal with on a day-to-day basis, based on a really short sample size of the playoffs. But, oh, my God, did I not want to be in that room with him.
Well, yeah, but selfishly, like, I'll take all the viral media clips and, you know, working for a company that cares about, like, social media video views and stuff. Like, you would get a lot of them if Paul Maurice was the coach.
Well, or Paul Maurice, John Tortorella yelling at Scott and sure. I post it and it goes viral. Yeah.
Yeah, but Paul Maurice is also a guy who's on the verge of his third straight Stanley Cup final appearance and is a Stanley Cup winning coach. So, I think that'd be somebody like him would be a great hire as well if he was on the market.
That's what we're saying. Great coach, not easy to deal with.
Yeah, well, hey, I think we'd rather that than a very media-friendly coach that can't get the job done.
Did you see him talking about shotgunning beers?
I did.
Sometimes you pray, sometimes you shotgun beers. He was talking about, like, time and a place for everything. He's like, have you ever shotgunned a beer? Yeah. Have you ever shotgunned a beer in church? No, because it's not the appropriate place.
So let me ask you guys this question, because hypothetically, let's say Bruce Cassidy was on the market right now. I feel like it would be a pretty easy decision to maybe bring him in as a head coach. Very Stanley Cup winning coach, familiarity. You know, Jim Montgomery obviously has his shortcomings come playoff time, but a great coach. Is there any part of you, too, that is just still wondering why incredibly successful NHL coaches in recent years have not worked out in this market with this group of players? And I know that the group of players has significantly changed, especially since, well, let's call it last March, but even the year before when Bergeron retired and stuff like that. But is there any part of you that looks at this Bruins dressing room and says, you still have McAvoy, you still have Pasternak, but they've also been a part of some rooms where great, in some cases, championship-winning coaches, they didn't work out here. Is there any part of you guys that is wondering about that?
Honestly, no, not really, because of what you said. Like, the rooms changed so much. I guess, like, unless you think David Pasternak and Charlie McAvoy are the problem. Like, if you think they're the reason it didn't work with Bruce Cassidy and Jim Montgomery, then I guess you'd have a case, and I guess you'd probably want to trade those guys if you think that they're the problem and just completely start new. But I feel like, I mean, you traded your captain, you traded veteran leaders like Carlo and Coyle. Like, you've changed. Bergeron and Krejci retired.
DeBrusk walked.
Yeah, like, so much has... Right, DeBrusk was the center of the problem with Cassidy, according to... Right, like, who are the two names you heard about when Cassidy got fired? It was DeBrusk and Carlo. Like, they're both gone.
Even so, Trent Frederick, to an extent, I feel like we heard his name.
Yeah, true. Right, yeah, Frederick was another one where, like, Jim Montgomery came in, and it was like, wow, look how much better he is for Frederick than Cassidy was. So much has changed that I'm like, I mean, going back, like, obviously you can go back to Montgomery because that was just last year. It's almost completely worthless to go back to Cassidy. Like, 97% of the roster has changed since Bruce Cassidy was coach. So, like, I just don't really see any connection there. Again, unless you think Pasternak and McAvoy are, like, at the core of why it hasn't worked with those coaches. But I don't really think it is. Like, I think, yeah, like, it hasn't been their team yet. Now it's going to be. So my approach is, like, I'm going to give those guys the chance to take this team, make it their own, and see what it looks like. And if 2 years from now we're hearing about all these issues in the locker room and the team can't seem to get up for games, and, like, okay, then we can look at Pasternak and McAvoy and question them as leaders. But I think it would be kind of unfair to do that right now.
Yeah, and I don't agree that those two are the problem. I were the problem, are the problem. I think Charlie McAvoy has some things to show everybody on the ice going forward here. I think we want to see a little bit more of the type of player we saw in that Four Nations game against Canada. I know 82 games a year is not realistic, but that difference maker, right? Be that difference maker night in, night out if you can be, which I think he can be. And I think David Pasternak loved Bruce Cassidy. I think that they had a really good relationship player coach wise. I think that he was truly, I remember him being truly kind of upset for Bruce when he was fired and let go. And I do think Pasternak, I think he liked Monty too. I think Monty obviously called him out last playoff season. But besides that, and Pasternak said he didn't mind that at all. I, with my own eyes, saw a lot of communication between Pasternak and Monty in practices earlier last season. And I don't think it was certainly anything with David and the two coaches or McAvoy and the two coaches. So I think that if there was any issues in the room, I think those players have now moved on.
I think Pasternak didn't love getting benched for the third period in that game early on this season. And I think you could kind of tell that from his comments afterwards. I know we talked about it at the time, but he didn't quite answer it the same way as Marchand, where Marchand was like, people have a problem with that. Like, I made a bad play. Of course he was going to get on me for it. Pasternak was more like, you could tell it was kind of like a lukewarm endorsement of, like, well, he's the coach and I have to play better, but it wasn't quite the full-throated support that Marchand gave Montgomery.
And Monty came out of the gates firing this year. Like, you saw in Utah when he was like hitting Marchand in the back and yelling at him, which we all thought was deserved at the time. But when you look back and it's like, oh, wow, that was only November. right? Like it seems that Monty just kind of entered the year on a bit of a short fuse because of some of the contract negotiation stalemates going on with management probably at the time. And clearly he had that job in St. Louis right in his pocket. So, you know, it did seem that just everybody just seemed to be off at that point in the season.
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely a lot of tension there. And then the only reason why the tension kind of came off after the firing was because it was like expectations were lowered. And then you're starting to realize, okay, it's not a playoff team. Like, and obviously Sacco comes in and tries to do the best job that he can with the team that he ended up with after the deadline. So not an easy job for him to come in and do, but certainly a different personality as well than the other guys, even though he coached under both of them.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's like, it's hard to remember that, like, this was actually still a team either in a playoff spot or like right there on the bubble through January, basically even into February.
Four Nations, yeah. We're talking about, oh, well, this is right before McAvoy got hurt. But like after the first few games of Four Nations, we're like, McAvoy looks like he's running through a brick wall. Like he looks amazing. And if he hadn't gotten hurt, our thought was that they were going to get back on track because some guys were playing really well in Four Nations. It was kind of like a nice break reset. And at the time, I don't think Hampus Lindholm had been ruled out for the season yet either. So Four Nations was in like mid-February and we still were talking about, oh, this team might make the playoffs. And then all of a sudden March rolls around and it became much more obvious they weren't going to. And then they start to sell off.
All right, Bridget and Scott, let's move on quickly to what we discussed last week. And that was our exercise of trying to put together a roster that was, and I'm going to say this for the kids in the back to hear, cap compliant. It's the word of the week. If you don't know it, please learn it. I really, truly appreciate all of our listeners who shared their opinion on what they would do this offseason. In particular, when their offerings were cap compliant. Okay, there's a reason why our roster isn't a Stanley Cup contending roster out of the gates next year, because there's so many problems the Bruins have. You can't afford them all in free agency. And quite frankly, you shouldn't want to afford it all because you don't want so much of your roster to rely on free agency. So we try to take a realistic approach. Now, there are philosophical differences in opinion, and that's great. In that episode, I wasn't even in love with the roster we came down to. That's the thing with this Bruins team right now, is there is not one roster that any fan or media analyst or anybody can build that appeases everybody. Many people want for the Bruins to go after Marner. A lot of people, more people don't. Some people want to go after Ehlers, and that's really it. And okay, but all right, well, that's not a ton going on there. And then there's some more conservative approaches, and people want to offer sheet Matthew Knies, and hey, if they could do it, go for it. But I'm telling you, Toronto's going to sign him. There's a lot of varying opinions. Many of them were realistic. Many of them were not. We appreciate all the feedback nonetheless. But Bridget and Scott, I want to get your opinions on the feedback we got and some of your own internal thoughts about what you would do different again if we did this exercise again.
Well, like the main thing that I saw, well, one of the main things that I saw was people saying that we probably underestimated the value of Sam Bennett and what he's going to get in open market. I will say we actually gave him more money than what the AFP projections were saying. So we knew he was going to probably get more than what that analytics company was projecting, but it definitely did not help that the day after we recorded, there was a report that he might get as much as over $10 million, which we obviously hadn't gotten that at the time. And if he was that price, guys, I don't think we would want to sign him, right? Like that's an overpay.
Like that's insane for a guy who has one 50-point season on his resume, whose best years have come with Matthew Tkachuk as his right wing. Like, I said this on Twitter, like, unless you're putting him with your own Matthew Tkachuk, which in the Bruins case would mean putting him with David Pastrnak, like, you don't even expect 50 points. And, you know, I'm okay going 7 to 8 million for a tone setting, physical playoff performer, second line center. Like I am. If you could sign Sam Bennett for 7.5 or the same that you gave Elias Lindholm, 7.75, like, I'm okay with that. Is it maybe a slight overpay just looking at the raw production? Maybe, but I'd be fine with it. But 10 million, I mean, that, even in a rising cap world, that kind of money should be reserved for the elite of the elite talent, or at least like really good bona fide first line talent. And Sam Bennett, for all the intangibles and even the tangibles come the playoffs, I mean, look, he leads the Panthers in goals this postseason, or, you know, it's right up there. You still, like, you can't overpay for that, because if you bring him in and he ends up as your second line center and he doesn't have a Matthew Tkachuk on his wing, and all of a sudden, like, he has, you know, half a point per game, like 41 points in a season, you're going to be like, wait, we're paying this guy $10 million for this? It's like, you might not even make the playoffs if you have a $10 million player putting up those kind of point totals in the regular season. So, yeah, like, you're right. It was unfortunate timing, because that report was not out there when we recorded. But, yeah, obviously that would change the conversation quite a bit. Like, that's at least $2 million a year more than I would be comfortable giving Sam Bennett.
Yeah, I mean, my philosophy going into that exercise was spend on the margins in free agency where it could help your team, but don't overspend in free agency, and just kind of see where that and health takes you next year. I thought that, you know, spending $6+ million on Sam Bennett when the salary cap is going to be 113 in 2 years for a second line center isn't crippling you financially. And then Dante Fabro on the back end, $4.5 million, no problem. Obviously, I would have liked, you know, short money on a 1 year deal with Patrick Kane in this exercise, but we ended up going with Will Cooley, which was part of Scott's plan. Scott's plan was honestly too domino-y to probably recap right now, but essentially he wanted Marner and Cooley, and there was a lot of financial moves he was going to make to afford all that with some trades. But Will Cooley was another player we got some feedback on. That Bridget, can you put that graphic up again one more time? I think it was $3.5 million. $3.5 million is what we said we would offer sheet Will Cooley for. There was a lot of feedback from people saying that would not get the job done for Will Cooley. In fact, there was somebody who reached out to me online that, forgive me for forgetting your handle at the moment, but from the tri-state area, and on the radio, they've been speculating it would take at least close to $5 million for anybody to pry him away from the Rangers. Scott, I don't know if you want to update people on the Rangers cap situation right now and some of the players that they have to sign, but I think they have $8+ million in cap. I know Keandre Miller is one of the guys that they have to make a decision on as well, in addition to Will Cooley.
Yeah. I don't have their cap up right now, but yeah, I think it was like $8.5 or $9 million that they haven't this off season. You're right. They do have to sign Keandre Miller as well.
And Panarin, I think next year, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, just sticking to this year, like, you would assume they want to keep Keandre Miller. They already traded away one of their left shot defensemen in Ryan Lindgren. So they would have a lot of holes on that side of their defense if they let Miller walk. Yeah, I think, and I think we might have even said this on the pod. I know I wrote it after when I wrote up our exercise, like, it pretty much right away. I was like, yeah, $3.5 million probably wouldn't have been enough, but we were going by the AFP projections. So yeah, like, you probably have to go to $4 million at least, I would think, to really tempt the Rangers. I don't know if you have to go as high as $5 million. I guess if you do, then I'm probably out at that point. But $4-4.25, something like that would make sense. And I will say, like, we actually left ourselves enough cap space to go a little, you know, say $500,000 higher on both Cooley and Bennett. So it's not like our plan was completely out the window, even if you had to go a little higher on those guys. But yeah, like, I'm not trying to, like, break the bank for Will Cooley. I just think he would be a good target because the Rangers have cap issues. It might be more tempting tempted to take a pick from him than other teams that have cap space. Like we mentioned, the Leafs with Matthew Knies. I get why people want him and why that was a popular pick, but I also don't understand why the Leafs wouldn't match unless you're like going $10 million and like really going crazy for him or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to mostly get to the kind of more realistic comments that we got. And those were certainly like numbers, definitely realistic opinions, thoughts on what you could and couldn't get guys for. Especially, like I said, with that report coming out right after that Bennett was gonna potentially get overpaid by a team, it sounds like. There was also, I'll read one of the comments I got on my post about the exercise that we did. It was from Sean, and he said, Bennett doesn't solve any issues. They currently have a bunch of two, like second and third line centers. They need to figure out who's going where. And basically the money was an issue for him too. And then that we probably wouldn't have had the extra money to pay a second pair of defensemen. So we decided to go a little bit, like I'll say like middle end. Like we didn't sign a cheap guy to fill the defenseman opening that we had. We signed Dante Fabro there for 4.5 on our second D pair. We really liked that addition, but I guess if you had to spend more on Bennett or Cooley or someone else, you might not have the ability to go spend that much money in that spot, which then would leave you with somebody like Joakim Harju again. And Sean said he didn't mind him, but I will say Joakim Harju was also a free agent. I don't know if the Bruins are going to be sending him an offer. I wasn't impressed with what I saw from him here, but maybe that's what you're kind of stuck filling the hole with, a guy for maybe $2 million or so, instead of 4.5 like we had for Fabro.
Yeah, I mean, like I said last episode, I just think that not enough is being talked about how much Boston needs a top four right shot defenseman. I think it's their second biggest need beyond a serious top six forward. And you know what that means, that I have to cheap out at one of my forward positions for a legit top four. I think calling Dante Fabro a legit top four defenseman, depending on who you ask, might be subjective, but I think certainly last year he was, and he's young enough at 27 years old. He's still entering his prime, and you can, again, Scott likes to say this a lot, which is especially with hockey trades in particular, but if you're acquiring somebody, or actually Scott mentions this at trade deadlines a lot, if you're acquiring somebody for, you know, not just as a rental, like to be a part of your program going forward, I think it makes an investment a little bit more worth it, because you know you're expecting them to be like Dante Fabro would be ideally part of the solution going forward for the next, you know, handful of years or so, and he'd be in his early 30s at that point. So I just think that you don't, maybe the Bruins find a top four defenseman in a future draft or in a trade or next offseason, but all I know is that right now I think it's kind of slim pickings. And I actually like Fabro. I like his upside, I like his skating, his mobility, and again, he's still, you know, he's not young, but he's certainly not old at 27 years old in hockey terms. So I just like that. And I just don't think that it doesn't make much sense to me to try to fill a bunch of forward positions, but then just plug in somebody else to be your second right shot defenseman. That's not a hole that you just fill with anybody. Like, you have to have a legit top four defenseman if you want to be a serious team. The Bruins want to be a serious team next year. Whether or not it happens, that's what they want. They want to be back in the playoffs. You're not going to be back in the playoffs with, you know, Joakim Harju probably as your top four, you know, right shot defensive behind Charlie McAvoy.
If you were to put Joakim Harju in that spot and watch him play there for a whole season, I think you'd have a different opinion on what you'd want to do with that spot.
I mean, I don't think anyone wants Joakim Harju as a top four defenseman. I think it's if you're spending on forward because scoring and offense is your biggest need, can you ride it out with like Joakim Harju and Peak rounding out the right side of your defense, at least to start the year? And then if if you're in it come trade deadline, you trade for a defenseman. Like,
it's a long, that's a long time of the season to go without that position, though, because we saw how many goals they let up last year. It's they have needs everywhere. They can't keep the puck out of the net last year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I agree. I obviously, as we've talked about, like, you can't fix everything. So I guess specifically, like, the scenario where you go all in on Mitch Marner and you build your offseason around that, like, yeah, you're going to have to cheap out on defense, right? Like, you're not getting Mitch Marner and a legit top four defenseman. There's just, unless there's some really creative move that I'm missing, like, I don't see how you do that. So that would be the scenario where I'm okay cheaping out on defense, because I decided that my single biggest need to address this offseason was getting another star forward who puts up points. And if I do that, then I can take a step back in other areas and address those later, right? Like, and again, that all comes back to perspective, because I'm approaching this as, we're not fixing everything in one offseason, so I'm not even going to try to, right? Like, the opportunities to land a player of Mitch Marner's caliber are far more infrequent than the opportunities to land a player of Dante Fabro's caliber, or even Sam Bennett's caliber, or Will Cooley, or whoever. So if you decide, like, okay, this is what we want to do this offseason, is go get Mitch Marner, because that's the kind of difference maker we need now and long term, then you should be okay taking a hit in other areas, knowing that this is going to be a process that takes more than one summer, and we'll address that stuff down the line. So that's, and ultimately, like, that, you know, we talked about it on that episode, like, that was my plan A. In my perfect world, that's what I would want to do. I know it's hard, and there's financial challenges, and there's the question of, like, would Mitch Marner even want to come here? So I fully recognize it's unlikely the Bruins land Mitch Marner. But, you know, I do think, like, it's something they should be seriously discussing, because getting Mitch Marner is, getting a player like Mitch Marner is a lot harder than any of these other roster spots or types of players that we're talking about.
Well, and to that point, though, that's the only scenario where I look at Dante Fabro and I say the Mitch Marner situation is probably the only one around the league this offseason where the Bruins wouldn't be able to afford Dante Fabro. So 9 out of 10 situations in this offseason, I think the Bruins can afford him, which is kind of why I'm talking about, you know, him in this situation. The Mitch Marner thing, you know, Scott, I trust me, I love the idea of adding a 100-point winger to this team. I really do. And if the Bruins do end up signing Mitch Marner, I'm not going to sit here and pound my fists on this desk and be pissed about it. But what I would say is, you know, there is something to be said about locking yourself in long-term and financially to a – how old is Mitch Marner now? Is he 28, 29?
28, I believe.
So, like, he's still very much in his prime. But you're talking about a winger
who just turned 28.
Okay, so he's 28 years old. So you're talking about, you know, 80% of his contract. He's in his 30s. He's already a winger that hasn't proven himself in the he's inconsistently proven himself in the playoffs. He's a flashy, skilled winger. He's not the most physical. He's not the you know, the toughest, you know, physically or mentally. And he's not 25, he's 28, he's going to be 30 before we know it. Yes, he'd be with McAvoy and Pastrnak in their primes going up together, but I just think there's questions on the ice as well with him, in addition to knowing you're going to get 100 points from him. And I just think I just don't think it's as rosy as you're just going to add an elite. I get they need talent, but if we don't think that this team is going to be a championship caliber team with him in the next couple of years, and is it even worth that investment when he's going to be in his, you know what I'm trying to, if it's going to take that much work to fill out the roster, you might be wasting his time here too. You might make the playoffs, but you might not be a serious contender. So if you have so many issues, I just don't know if it's wise to put all your chips into two of your top, in your top two right wingers, because you still have things to figure out. And the cap is going up. That's helpful, but you get my point. If they have so many issues,
are you wasting
his time here?
I guess the counter is, what's the path to championship contention without landing another star forward at some point. Mm. And like, where are you? You're not getting any other star forward this summer. So when and how are you getting one? Because I don't think, like, the next time the Bruins are a Stanley Cup contender, I don't think it's going to be with Morgan Geekie as their second best forward. So no. you need that second star with or behind Pastrnak at some point. So if you're going to pass on Mitch Marner now, you better at least have some plans, like, in the makings for how you're going to eventually get one.
Well, let's call it the way that it is. This is why this is an uncomfortable time for the Bruins to be in this situation. You have Charlie McAvoy and David Pastrnak entering their prime years. David Pastrnak turned 29 the other day. McAvoy turns 28 in December. So you're talking about your two core players that are entering their 30s in the next couple of seasons here. And the Bruins right now are entering a potential rebuild, even though they wouldn't say that, because if they screw this up, then they're porked. And you're not going to want David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy in their early 30s looking around the room and at the organization saying, boys, we're trying to win here and we are still in no man's land. So this is a very uncomfortable time for the Bruins to be trying to have a retool on the fly with these two guys in their prime, which would support your stance here, Scott, of, yeah, that's why I'm saying go get Marner, because he can try to accelerate and help their primes. But in doing so, you're also making it tougher to supplement around them, which you also need. It's a very, very – they're stuck between a rock and a hard place right now, because the answer to your question about how do you get back to Stanley Cup contention, it's probably a little bit of patience for a couple of seasons, but, you know, hitting on your drafting and developing and identifying not so much the home run free agency acquisition or trade, but the right ones. And I just feel like if you're going all in on Mitch Marner, there's no other ability to help out the rest of your roster, which you do need to do that. And yeah, it's why this offseason is fascinating. Now, there's other options too we haven't really discussed much, and we didn't discuss it in this exercise. A little bit with Will Cooley, a little bit with Matthew Nyes, but there are some more realistic situations around the league that Bruins could try to take advantage of. There are, like, I'm blanking on his name real quick, but we have, oh boy. So we have the guy in Columbus, which is Dmitry Voronkov. So there's an opportunity there. You have Marco Rossi in Minnesota. And these are players that their respective teams probably fully intend to re-sign. But for one reason or the other,
well, maybe not Marco Rossi. His name has been out there on the trade block for like over a year. And I think the Wild be very willing to trade him if they get the right. I mean, he's a restricted free agent, so for now you're just getting his rights. But I think Minnesota would absolutely be willing to move him.
And if they do have interest in doing that, Scott, I actually am pretty flabbergasted by that, because if you look at their NHL roster, first of all, he was second in their team in scoring last year. But if you trade him, it's not like they have some first round stud that's on the, like, they don't have a very deep NHL roster. Like, he's one of the younger, exciting players. But beyond those two guys, there's Isaac Howard is very much a possibility for the Bruins to get his rights, I think. Tampa Bay has said they're going to trade him. The Bruins could be the first call to Tampa Bay. Give him a second round pick, which is what, you know, they would get for compensation. If somebody offers you them next year or whatever, and maybe throwing a prospect as a sweetener, like, the Bruins could be that team to pry away an Isaac Howard. I'm just saying there are other things around the league that the Bruins could try to do to help supplement, an off season, but it's a tough spot that they're in right now. It really is.
Yeah. I want to add this too, 'cause I was thinking this when you guys were talking about Marner, if this had just lined up a little bit differently, that the Bruins do have this cap space and they traded away all these guys, if that was to happen the same year that Jack Eichel's contract came up, then I feel like it would be like, that would be a home run, right? More so than Mitch Marner would be. But there's all this time for Eichel to extend with Vegas, or, you know, like, it's just not even a guarantee that he ends up on the market next season in general, where his contract comes up at the end of next year. But if that had lined up to be this year, my roster would have been built around Jack Eichel.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that'd be an easy one. That's the dream, right? Like there's your number one center. There's reason to think he would want to come here. Early in his career, he said he wanted to play for the Bruins one day. Obviously being a Chelmsford native, but yeah, I guess until we hear otherwise, like I'm operating under the assumption that he's going to extend in Vegas. I know he loves it there. Obviously they love having him. He just had a career high in points. I know, you know, they ended up being a disappointing playoffs for them. But he's been, you know, their top forward on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
On a team that won the Cup. So I imagine he extends there until I hear something else. But yeah, that would certainly be the dream.
That would have been, if it just timed out right, then that would have been like the home run, but
I'll add this too, guys, because these are all free agent acquisitions, and that's, you know, that's great, and there's a time for that. But if you know, this is another reason why I think that the Bruins really need to start stockpiling their draft picks and develop them and at least have them as collateral in their system in case you ever wanted to just have the versatility of making serious hockey trades around the league too. Because you look at the Florida Panthers, right? And look at what Bill Zito has done in his time as GM. You would look at the Florida Panthers and say, huh, they're on the verge of going to 3 straight Stanley Cup finals. They must just have been a team that just crushed their drafting and developing over time. And eventually they got up to being contenders. Actually, no, it's not how they've gotten to prominence here. You have Alex Barkov, of course, Aaron Ekblad as well. 2 high draft picks from at this point, what, a decade ago. But they won the President's Trophy 3 years ago. And what do? They trade Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar to Calgary. Imagine in Boston, if they won a President's Trophy and they traded their top scorer and their second defenseman, we'd be sitting here saying, even if it was for Matthew Tkachuk, we'd be saying, that is a ballsy move. That might go right back into our face. But Bill Zito had a feel for the game and recognized there was an opportunity to take advantage of the Calgary Flames situation where Matthew Tkachuk was on his verbally told him he wanted out. So there's that trade. But it goes so much deeper than that, okay? Sam Reinhart, they traded for. Sam Bennett, they traded for. Luis Dorainen, they traded for. Nico Mikkola was a free agent signing. All around their roster of their core players right now. Now, Anton Lundell was a draft pick by them, very promising young forward for them. But my point is, you look at the Florida Panthers core right now, much of it was acquired through trade and recognizing situations around the league that they could take advantage of and maybe seeing a player that might just be in a situation that wasn't working for them, but we could do something with them here. And you look back at those trades, Zito fleeced a lot of those trades, like absolutely fleeced. Go look back and laugh at the Sam Bennett return that Calgary got. Go look back and laugh at, you know, event now in hindsight, the return that Buffalo got for Reinhart. So there are ways for teams to rebuild. It takes creativity, it takes guts, and it takes collateral. You do need to have pieces in your system worth giving up. And I think that right now the Bruins are a little bit bare in that category. So they might just need to have a little bit of patience here, maybe for a year or two, to try to restock a little bit where they can look around the league and maybe take advantage of some opportunities. I just mentioned a few names that they could probably try to acquire this offseason. Tampa Bay, Isaac Howard, Hobie Baker winner. Like, would you trade a second-round pick in Fabian Lysell for Isaac Howard, who we know is on the way out? I think you do that, absolutely. So Marco Rossi, like Scott said, for some reason, Minnesota's not high on the player. Former first round pick, 60 points last year, young center. You could probably offer sheet him what his long term projection is and really handcuff Minnesota or do him a favor. There are ways the Bruins can be creative. It's not just going to be through free agency. And I just feel like maybe Mitch Marner, maybe there's a way to figure it all out. But my point is, you got to do it from all angles here. And I just think that to do it from all angles, you do need some draft capital and some prospects that are worth a damn to have that in your bank as well.
Yeah. And like with Florida, it's a combination of bold trades like the Tkachuk trade, you know, like again, giving up Huberto coming off a 110 point season in Uyghur, like that was a bold move. It looks like an obvious one to make in retrospect, but that required some stones. There's the smart calculated risks like Sam Reinhart, I would say in that category where everyone knows he's talented, but he hasn't quite put it together in Buffalo at the time of that trade. That's a smart risk to take. And then there's some that's borderline just luck. Like if everyone knew Carter Verhaeghe was going to become a 40 goal scorer and this clutch playoff performer, like there would have been way more interest. All he had been was a fourth liner in Tampa prior to that. Like if obviously there would have been way more interest in him and Tampa wouldn't have let him go if teams thought he was going to become this player. Gustav Forsling, they claimed off waivers. Like how, yeah, give them credit for doing it and then developing him. But like, how do you project that? Like who looks at anyone on waivers and is like, oh yeah, that's going to be a top pairing defenseman for us. Like, no, there's some luck involved in it. The player turned out to be much better than anyone at that time thought he was going to be. Yeah, now that they're in the championship window, you can do things like trade for Marchand because he wants to go there. And he's, you know, a veteran that you're getting at a discounted price. Or you take the risk on Seth Jones, who turned out to be a perfect fit for them. Like, it's been a lot of smart moves. And yeah, you're right. Like it hasn't been all through drafting and developing for them, but there's also still just like an element of luck. I mean, Sam Bennett, yeah, that looks like an easy trade now. He was like, I wouldn't say he was bordering on bust, but he had underperformed in Calgary. He was a fourth overall pick who wasn't playing anything like a fourth overall pick. So, you know, what I would add is like the Bruins have done this and are trying to do this. Obviously they haven't been as successful as the Panthers, but like you look at Pavel Zacha, like that was a Panthers-esque identifying a talented high pick who wasn't clicking on his original team and was much better for you. Like that's been, it hasn't translated to a Stanley Cup. It hasn't been that successful, but that was a successful move, a successful identification. Same with Morgan Geeky. Only he was a fourth liner in Carolina, fourth liner in Seattle. Bruins see something. Even when they signed him, we talked about, hey, like his 5-on-5 scoring rates and limited minutes are actually pretty good. Like there might be something there. Well, now you have a 30 goal scorer who you can put on your top line with David Pastrnak. Like, so it is something like every team looks to do. The Bruins look to do. They've done it successfully in a couple cases. But it's going to have to be part of what they do going forward because, yeah, like Florida, like they're not loaded with a ton of young talent that's going to come up and make a difference. So you're going to have to find some of those guys from other organizations who, hey, maybe it's just not working there for whatever reason. We bring him in and he turns into a top six or a top four guy for us.
Like maybe Fraser Mitton, who they got in the trade for Carlo with Toronto, like is that kind of what you guys are talking about, like identify maybe a younger guy. You already knew you wanted to sell, so you're going to get rid of Carlo to a team that'll give you a good draft pick and a promising young, guy to add to your system. I mean, they got some prospects back besides just.
Yeah, I mean, like that's a little different because it's a prospect basically, you know, limited NHL experience. I would say maybe a more apt one is Casey Mittelstadt, who wasn't working in Colorado, but you know, has already had a 57 and a 59 point season, and maybe there's still potential for more. Like, again, I have my doubts about Casey Mittelstadt, but if he turns into like a 70 or 75 point guy, at some point here in the next few years, you're going to look back on that and be like, wow, that was a really good risk for the Bruins to take. Like, yeah, that contract was a little high. Colorado kind of just wanted to dump him in order to get Coyle, but it worked out. Like, that he could become that kind of player again. I have my doubts just because I don't really love the way Casey Mittelstadt plays, but like, maybe I'll be wrong about him.
Well, your plan involved trading Casey Mittelstadt, and I think we all
well, yeah, but
this... that was what probably needed to be part of the plan if you were going to get Marner. Yeah. But yeah,
that's why I'm starting to turn on the whole Marner thing. I really am. I believe me, I appreciate the skill and the production that he would bring, but that quote from Miracle where Herb Brooks says to Craig Patrick, he's like, "I'm not looking for the best players, Craig. I'm looking for the right ones." Like, that's just kind of coming into my mind right now because my fear is that the Bruins are going to enter this offseason and they're just going to want to pay for the best known commodity, and as opposed to continuing, as Scott has pointed out, they have been trying to find diamonds in the rough. But I just think, I'm not saying for the Bruins not to spend all of their cap allowance. I'm just saying they might be better off spreading it around, you know, get it in. And my fear is that they spend all the money on Mitch Marner and then, or, you know, a lot of money on Mitch Marner. And maybe it doesn't work out. Maybe he's not a fit in Boston. And now you're looking at, and you know what, not for nothing, but he has been, I know Toronto doesn't need much for things to take things, but you know, he was a bit of a distraction, a polarizing player in Toronto with his contract negotiations from years back. And I don't think the Bruins need another scapegoat for their fan base to be like, oh, see, now if Marner doesn't come to Boston and take him to the promised land or do really well in his first year, well, now he's going to get, you know, all the finger pointing that Swayman got. I just don't think the Bruins need, I don't think they need it. I think they have so many holes. We've talked about it. And I don't know. I just think they might be better off just trying to piece together the best well-rounded hockey team that they can right now while still replenishing their system and still trying to identify some diamonds in the rough. I think there's moves to be made this offseason, some low-risk, high-reward moves. I think Isaac Howard is a low-risk, high-reward type move that the Bruins could go out and make and potentially have a top-six winger for the next, you know, decade plus. I mean, like, the whole league knows Tampa Bay is moving on from him. They have to move him before August of 2026. Be that first team to knock on Breezewell's door and say, "Hey, here's our second. Here's Lysel, you know, like, or here's whomever, and let's make a deal." And Tampa might just sit there and say, "All right, fine, let's do it because we're not guaranteed that we're going to make a deal with somebody else that we like better." Like, get to the market before other teams do on situations you know you can expose. Bill Guerin's friendly with the Boston Bruins management brass. He's known them for a long time, I think. And hey, maybe they're not too happy about how they handled Charlie McAvoy's injury.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if that's the friendliest relationship between the McAvoy thing and the Pat Maroon trade the year before.
Well, do us a favor, do us a solid here. Do us a solid. You owe us.
Gary did. He gave you Murat Husnadinov, future 100-point scorer.
That is true. Anyway, I would be cautious to just overreacting to what we saw last year, just going and getting Mitch Marner. That's going to solve all our problems. I mean, he's not.
But he might go a long way toward, again, like, I get what you're saying. I just think before you become a cup contender again, like, at some point, you got to add some elite talent. And I just don't know how many opportunities you get to do that. One is sitting there this offseason, it all costs us money. Like, I think you have to consider it because you need players like that. Like, as much as we want to point to the Panthers and how well-rounded they are and how they've found diamonds in the rough, it's like, okay, but Matthew Tkachuk is also an elite talent, and Alexander Barkov's an elite talent, and Sam Reinhart's an elite talent. And it's like, you have one of those. You have David Pastrnak.
But how
you're going to need more elite talent at some point. And I just wonder, like, how long does it take you to get that if you're not doing it this summer, is it next trade deadline? Is it next summer? And if it's not next summer, now you are in that situation where it's like Pastrnak and McAvoy are into or approaching the 30s. And it's like, hey, it's been now 3-4 years of like, who's our second guy with Pastrnak? And we still don't have it.
How much of the cap are those players in Florida taking up though? So if you add Marner at 13, you got Pastrnak just under 12. You got McAvoy at what? Just under 10. And then look, again, I'm not sitting, as I said a half hour ago, like if the Bruins sign Marner, I'm not going to slam my fist on the table and be pissed about it because I see the upside. I'm just throwing caution to the wind that it's probably very tempting for the Bruins right now to go out and get the best player available and pay for it.
I don't know if that saying makes sense here. Is it caution to the wind when you're like, screw it, I'm doing it anyway, even though it's not.
Yeah, like, I think signing Marner would be more of the caution to the wind
move. Yeah, signing Marner would be
more. Yeah, what I'm saying is, what I'm trying to say is I wouldn't, because they're going to be tempted to go and sign the best player available who's going to cost the most, I just think that there's something to be said about stop trying to pay the most for the known commodity and try to keep finding the players that can produce that you're not paying that top dollar to. Like, I hate to be that guy that's like, well, look at the best team in the league right now. But Florida is proof right now that, like, it can be done. Yes, those players you mentioned, Scott, are elite players, but the trick is trying to find elite talent, but you're not paying top dollar for it for as long as possible. And I know that that's okay. Well, Brian, where's that coming from? This is why we're saying they got to get in the weeds and try to find, you know, they have to be. Don, I was listening to Connor Ryan and Ty Anderson on one of their recent podcasts, and Ty made a good point. He's like, Don's been here for 10 years. Can you act like a seasoned vet? Can you be bold more so than your counterparts around the league? Like, I think that's a great point. Like, Don Sweeney needs to be bold now. I think he's tried to at times, but I think he needs to be a little bit bold and make some decisions here and try to execute. Cause I don't think free agency in the draft solely is the answer. They have to find pieces all around.
All right. Yeah. Well, we will have to pick this up later this week. Cause I do have to jump for another call. So.
All right. Thank you all very much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.